This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, dying doesn't normally give a person new life. It depends on your beliefs, but not on this earth anyway. Yet that's exactly what happened to Patrick Charnley. When he was in a coma, he experienced many hallucinations. These became the starting point for his novel called This, My Second Life. And I'm delighted to say that Patrick joins me. Patrick, we should probably talk about you firstly before we talk about This Second Life.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2021, in February, in the winter, it was COVID lockdown, and we were, you know, all at home. And I was having dinner with my wife that evening when suddenly my heart stopped beating and I stopped breathing. I was having a cardiac arrest. She immediately saw something was wrong. All of the life had dropped out of my face. She got help. A neighbor gave me CPR. The ambulance came. And it took them a long time to get my heart started again, about 40 minutes. And you're having some oxygen during that time because, you know, from the CPR, but not enough. The lack of oxygen caused a severe brain injury. So when I woke up from the coma, 5 days later, I woke up to a completely different life.
Mm-hmm. And what does that life look like, or certainly the beginnings of that new life?
Well, the beginnings, it was just completely bizarre. I was blind when I woke up. I had no idea what had happened. My memory was so bad that every time I was told what had happened, I would immediately forget. I thought I'd have been in a car crash. I just had no idea. As my sight sort of started to come back, I began to become more aware of what happened and realizing how much my life had changed. It was a question of a huge adjustment, really.
Mm-hmm. So the sight began to return after a couple of weeks.
The sight began to return. That's exactly right. But before it did, I had a rare condition which is called Charles Bonnet syndrome. When if a person loses their sight really suddenly, then the brain will try to compensate for that and make you hallucinate. So it sort of creates its own images. So I was sort of having a lot of hallucinations during this time, during hospital. And they were incredibly calming. And in one of them, the one that really stayed with me and the one that led to me writing my novel, I was in a tiny sort of cottage hospital in Dublin. And I don't know how I knew it was in Dublin. I just knew it was. Mm-hmm. It was sometime in the past, and I was in a little room, and outside the room was a group of young nurses, and they were talking very quietly, murmuring really, and when they were actually making plans to go out this evening. And I was there feeling completely safe, very sort of cozy in this room, and I felt so deeply looked after and so utterly at peace. And that feeling really stayed with me, and that is why I started to write, because I wanted to record that feeling. I wanted never to forget it, and ultimately to share it.
It's just such an unusual thing. I mean, did you have any connection with Dublin or with Ireland prior to this?
Well, I mean, I am an Irish citizen. My grandparents on my dad's side are Irish. I've been to Dublin, you know, quite a few times, but I don't really know why it was what was Dublin in it. But there was just something about the calm and kindness of the nurses. I mean, possibly, there were certainly Irish nurses in the hospital that I was in London. Possibly that filtered through to me, in an unconscious state. But whatever it was, you know, a wonderfully calm, caring environment.
And were all of the hallucinations calming in that way?
No, unfortunately, not all of them. I did have other very calming ones, but I also had some sort of more frightening ones. In one of them, I woke up in the night and I was trying to get out of my room, and I couldn't find the door, you know, because I couldn't see. Eventually I did. And when I opened the door, I saw the nave of a vast cathedral, and it was nighttime. And it looked like sort of further down the nave, you know, behind one of the arches, there was a man there, and I was just certain that he was there to kill me. And I was very, very upset. And my wife said that I, you know, was able to somehow call her, and she spent hours on the phone to me trying to calm me down that night.
And have those hallucinations stopped now?
Yeah, no, they did stop. They stopped sort of, you know, within the first few weeks. As my sight came back, the hallucinations subsided.
And your life prior to this seismic event, you were a corporate lawyer, so you were living at a very fast pace, I would imagine.
Yeah, I worked in the music industry as a lawyer, with a lot of travel, and a very, very busy job. I was kind of always on, quite stressed, and you know, didn't find much time to relax. Like you know, so many people, you know, today, I sort of wanted that sort of mindfulness. I wanted that calm. And then suddenly, in an instant, my life changed, and I woke up completely mindful. And I guess that's what I was kind of wanting to write about and record and share, was that sense of mindfulness, and to write a book that tried to give that to other people so that people could read it and feel calm and have a moment of peace in this very hectic world that we live in.
But your journey to getting from what happened to you, recovery, through to being able to produce this book now, it sounds to me, reading about you, that it hasn't been an easy one.
It hasn't been easy. I mean, I have a lot of difficulties from my brain injury, physical and you know, neurological. I'm very fatigued all the time. My memory is very poor. I have other cognitive problems, other physical problems. But ultimately, you know, the main feeling I have is that I'm alive. I've got my family, I've got my wife, my children, lovely other family and friends. And I feel very fortunate. And, you know, the fact that I've been able to write is a blessing. At the beginning, I was so dyslexic, I couldn't read at all, and certainly couldn't write. So I just feel ultimately, although, you know, something bad has happened and my life has changed in you know, lots of kind of quite negative ways, I feel ultimately very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. And you've written that you feel freer and more open now.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, does that mean that you maybe the career you were in wasn't the career you were meant to have, if you were being quite truthful with yourself as a younger man?
Well, I think you're right, really. You know, I got into that career almost by accident, really. And I always wanted to write, and I had been writing for years. I'd written a novel before that wasn't published, and I'd continued writing. So it's kind of I've come to doing what I ultimately wanted to do through a kind of a disastrous situation, in a way, you know.
Well, writing was always in your life by virtue of your mother, I'm sure.
Well, that's right. Yeah, yeah. My mother was a writer, Helen Dunmore. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And did she give you that love for the written word, or did it go in by osmosis?
By osmosis, I think, really. I mean, I grew up with her writing all the time, and our life was surrounded by books and words and other art, and other writers, you know, coming into the house, me going around on tour with her, things like that. So that life always seemed available to me. I think, you know, for a lot of people, the life of a writer can seem quite distant, and not really something, you know, that's open to people. But I always felt that it was, because I was sort of seeing it every day as I was growing up.
Now, it's been said about this book that fans of Claire Keegan will love it. And that is to my mind, one of the greatest compliments any newly published author can have. That's incredible. I mean, what a lovely thing to have said about this book.
Oh, it really is. I mean, before I tried to get the book published, around the time when the film of Small Things Like These came out, I read the book, and it was after I'd finished my book, and I absolutely loved that book. She captures that rural life and relationships so beautifully, and there's a calmness in that book that I hope there is in mine too. And you know, as you say, sort of people are making that comparison and saying, you know, that her fans might enjoy this book, mm-hmm. because I think she does have this sort of sense of calm that runs through it, and that kind of feeds into the reader. You know, you take that away with you.
So this, My Second Life, centers around a character who has had a similar experience to the one that you've just described you've had, right?
That's right, yeah. So his name is Jago Trevana. He's younger than me by about 20 years, but he has the same sort of health crisis that I had. And he goes to live with his uncle, who is his only family, on a small remote farm in the west of Cornwall, which is a, you know, very wild area, and very far away from the kind of the more urban life in England. And it's the perfect environment for him. It's a small farm. Jacob, his uncle, farms the old-fashioned way. There's no technology on the farm. There's not even electricity apart from one freezer. And it's the perfect environment for Jago to begin to learn about what's happened to him, begin to learn to live in his new skin, in his new life, away from the distractions of the modern world, away from all of the hectic things that certainly I experienced when I came home from hospital and you know went home to London, which was not a good environment really to recover in. And I wanted Jago to be in a much better, more nurturing environment where nature plays a big part in his healing.
Mm-hmm. So what you would have wanted for yourself if you could revisit that time, but of course everything is at such a high octane level when you're trying to recover from something that has been so difficult, I would imagine, for you and your family, that you don't get to do it perfectly the first time.
No, exactly. And you know, I mean, there is the, you know, it's very easy to look back and think, oh, you know, I wish it'd been like this or wish it'd been like that, but you know, I've got the wife who works in London and my children are at school in London. You know, we couldn't just up sticks and move to the country.
Yes.
But I wanted, I felt that nature was so important to me, has always been so important to me. And I felt that it was just like putting my character in the environment where he's surrounded by animals. He loves the horses. He rides the horses, spends time with them. I felt that that was just the perfect environment for somebody in that situation to begin to find their feet again.
Mm-hmm. Well, The Guardian said to see it through the lens of personal trauma would be to do this book a grave injustice. So the starting point might be similar, but the stories are not the same.
No, that's right. The stories are not the same. The character does have the brain injury, but it's definitely not a book about brain injury. I think it's a book about healing, about caring, the relationships that can bring people on, and also about what's important in the world. You know, there is Jago and his uncle Jacob, who is so kind. He's just such a good person. And then there's this other thread of the story that comes through where there is a neighbor called Bill Sligo, who is not good. He is everything that's bad in the world. And he kind of crashes into their space. He wants something of Jacob's, and it's clear that he's there to cause trouble. And so I think what I had in mind there was that there are these stark contrasts in the world. There is good, there is bad. And I wanted it to be quite stark in the book that, you know, would they be able to resist the bad and would good overcome?
Well, Patrick, we wish you well with it. It has been described as an astonishing debut. It's called This, My Second Life by Patrick Charnley.
Thank you, Claire.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.